This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It is the Batter Up Podcast for the week of May the 18th and 19th here on Radio.com and Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. My name is Will Pelagic, Willie P, colloquially known as, along with Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson. You can find us on the Radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts as we continue to work our way through the MLB negotiations and a possible return to play. Good afternoon, Joseph.
Good Tuesday to you, Will.
And good afternoon to Caleb.
What up?
So, there's really nothing different now than when we last spoke, other than Major League Baseball's expansive and thorough safety report. There still tends to be a bit of an impasse between the MLB owners and the players in terms of what they want financially on either side, in terms of wanting a return to play. There's obviously talk about the salary cap or not salary cap, things of that nature. Joe, you said something yesterday that I think represents a pretty good indicator in the fact that we've stopped kind of hearing publicly from both sides. There isn't as much infighting publicly in the public waves, which maybe gives us an indication that things are going on behind the scenes, and that probably brings a lot more optimism to the situation than has probably been in existence over the course of recent days.
Yeah, I think the owners still seem like they're totally willing to go into the media and, you know, tell written journalist things. They obviously Rob Manfred was on freaking Anderson Cooper last week. But I actually am, what really encourages me is that we aren't seeing the public retorts from Tony Clark like we did at the beginning of all of this, where, you know, the information about the revenue sharing was leaked, and then immediately Tony Clark was you know, he had his words, I think, on The Athletic saying it was a non-starter and all that stuff. Even if there are still some disagreements, which obviously there are at this point still, I just like the fact that those disagreements aren't coming out in the public. I'm very confident that progress is still being made despite us necessarily having to hear about it every single time.
Caleb, I'm kind of curious because, you know, while I think the money is getting all the attention, there seems to be some conversation about the safety protocols kind of being balked at. I'm kind of the opinion of, like, look, there is no precaution that is too ridiculous to me. Like, I feel like if you're doing anything you possibly can in the name of safety, that should be something that's taken into consideration. But you've been hearing some of the adversarial comments when it comes to that 67-page report.
Yeah, I think just to start off with, I would agree with you that you know, there's no length that you should be willing to not go to in order to play as safely as possible. The alternative to that is those that are saying, well, baseball players out of any sport are probably the most stuck to a way of life, a way of playing the game, and the way that you're going to go about restricting them is going to make them not be able to play to their full capacity, and that could then create problems. It's the one thing that I've really been surprised by is in that 67-page document, there is one specific thing that Major League Baseball wants baseball players to stop doing that I've heard repeatedly through national pundits and people on Twitter, various places, have a major problem with. And it's something that the Korean League implemented and then it was just kind of put away is the fact that there's no spitting. It is for some reason in you know, I get in the game of baseball that there's a lot of reasons to spit, whether it's just to, you know, you got sunflower seeds and you like to have something
dry going. Air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you just, you like just having, ritual. Yeah, you have that constant thing kind of going on. You're spitting into your glove to lubricate it up and kind of, you know, in your hands. And yeah, exactly. Yeah, so sure, there are all
licking
of those.
Licking the fingers on the mound yes. as going to the mouth.
So there are all of those things that that Major League Baseball, by putting this, you know, we want no spitting, obviously it's not going to come naturally to guys. And I don't think it's one of those things. I've heard some guys kind of going on, what's the punishment going to be? I don't think this isn't a punishment type of yeah. deal. This is a, we are trying to play as safe as possible once we can play. And this is one of those things you just have to follow. Somehow the Korean League is just able to do it and it's not a big deal.
Well, even so, like, I think we can take some things from some of the sports that have started up. Like, because we were able to see live sports for the first time this weekend. We saw the Bundesliga, German soccer get underway, and we saw NASCAR and also some televised golf. And to be honest, there were some moments in all of those events that didn't really look like there was social distancing going on. I know NASCAR, I feel like, and not that I'm surprised by this, but NASCAR looked like they probably took the most precautions, especially when you see Regan Smith sitting there with one mic and then another person off camera with a boom mic when they're interviewing drivers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That part was, I think, especially, I don't want to say jarring, but it was just like, oh, it was something that was noticeable. And the fact that he was wearing a mask the entire time. But, like, you know, watching that golf event, there were way too many people on that golf course, in my mind, to put on a broadcast, and they were all standing pretty darn close together. And when you think about, you know, the Bundesliga, yeah, for the most part, the goal celebrations were very muted, but it wasn't like we didn't see guys not hugging and high-fiving and stuff like that. We saw a bunch of violations of the code, if you will. So to act like something like spitting being outlawed would be a barrier to play, that just seems just ridiculous to me.
I totally agree, and I totally agree with you, Caleb, that it's not like they're not going to like toss somebody out of a game because they spit, you know, on the ground or in their glove or whatever. To me, what the whole 67-page safety document really underscored was just how seriously owners are committed to taking the safety precautions that the players have expressed that they want, you know, like the like Sean Doolittle. We talked about it last week, I think. Yeah, we talked about Sean Doolittle last week, that he came out and, you know, he was saying that we were zooming way ahead of the safety stuff and in talking about the money. And so I think that what this document really shows is kind of that attention to detail from the owners, that they are committed to trying to keep the field of play and even beyond the field, all the other places that players would go, as safe as possible on you know, on behest of the players, who are the ones that are going to be out there kind of taking that risk that we've been talking about. So for me, like, I'm less concerned. Like, I'm not really all these things, whether it's spitting, whether it's I'm trying to think of what some of the other kind of weird ones are, like,
trust me, the weird one is the fact that there will be no showers at the ballpark.
Yeah, that was an odd one, because when baseball players come off the field, they're like sweaty and dusty and dirty as
well. Yeah, guys will take showers in between innings. Yeah.
All three of us have been in Major League Baseball clubhouses. The amount of stank that goes on in those locations is palpable. You can feel it.
For sure. That is a weird one. I think there was another one about players having to make requests if they wanted to leave the team hotel when they're on the road. All these different kinds of things. Like, we might think that they're minuscule or, like, you know, overly concerning or, like, overly cautious. But I just think that that's the way that the owners want to err on all these things. So they design this whole safety plan, kind of just erring on the side of caution wherever they can, kind of knowing that rules are going to be broken, whether purposely or not. I'm sure, in terms of like things like spitting, I'm sure a lot of times when players do it, it won't be intentional. You know, it's not like they're trying to harm anybody, but it's just something that happens. But the more that they can kind of put that on the consciousness of the players and other team personnel who these protocols might involve, I think that's just going to overall improve the safety to the highest extent possible.
My whole issue, as we continue to look towards what exactly is going to need to happen until we get an agreement with these two sides, is what's the avenue to it? Because you feel like you have guys, anytime you're in a negotiation of this nature, you have very, you know, stand and ground type philosophies. You know, Major League Baseball is pretty ardent about a 50-50 split, and MLBPA, again, they used the term non-starter last week. And because of that, there's a significant, I think, barrier between those two sides. How does that get negotiated? How does that get reneged? Which side's going to buckle? Because I think you said this in an earlier radio appearance, Joe, the worst case scenario is the same for both of them, is that no baseball hurts each of these sides equally and hurts the entire sport in a way that I think many people would agree is irreparable harm if they do not play a season in 2020.
The fact that they have that common ground, I think, is really important, because that's kind of the fundamental baseline where you can say, okay, let's play baseball, let's figure out a way to share it, to get this thing going, because if we don't play, it's an absolute disaster. We'll all be making less money. I do think that the owners do kind of have the upper hand in terms of leverage, in my mind, at least. It's like the players have to kind of come up to their level to an extent. I mean, like, they both need to come together at some point. It's not like the owners can just kind of make this proposal and just rebuff any kind of offers that the players might make. But I do think, to an extent, you know, the Major League Baseball owners are the ones who will determine whether there is a season or not, you know, like, I mean, unless it's like a league of their own situation where it's like the players want to go out in there and like play, I don't know. So I do think that the owners have that, and I think that gives them some advantage in the negotiation. But I mean, I don't really have a gut feeling as to like what side is going to come out getting more or the better part of what they're bargaining for here, to be perfectly honest.
Well, I know initially just the fact that the owners were able to put out their offer, per se, first, that is what everything is going to be based off of. We're going to give and take based on this initial, you know, what the owners put out first. I think with any league, the owners typically get the upper hand. They are the ones who get the better end of the deal, or they have to, I guess, they're the ones who aren't negotiating as hard. I did find it interesting that there was a former team president. There was an ESPN article that I think came out earlier today or yesterday, that there was a former team president said it is in no one's interest to play this year except the game of baseball. But the long-term health of the game is at stake here. So, you know, it's one of those, I think everyone's, the obvious thing is, well, if we wanted to be as safe as possible, we're just not going to play. But if there's any league that needs to play because, you know, life would unfortunately move on without them, it is Major League Baseball.
And my whole thing is this, is that if this is really the way things are going between these two sides, then why is it only baseball that we're hearing this from? Like, are we going to have this same conversation in the NFL? Are we going to have this same conversation in the NBA and even hockey? Or is it just because you have the one situation where MLB hasn't started its season yet and they're basically next up, so to speak?
Yeah, so we've been talking a lot about the CBA that's kind of looming at the end of next season, right? And I think if there's no baseball, let's just say worst case scenario, there's like no agreement, there's no baseball this year, it's hard for me to see them like coming back next year and playing too, with the CBA negotiation kind of lingering on the horizon. Like, I think there's, and to go back to what Caleb was saying, you know, there's an opportunity cost to not playing baseball that extends beyond whatever the budget, the spreadsheets will say in terms of like how much the owners are going to get paid versus how much the players are going to get. You know, like there are numerical figures like that will represent one thing, and then I think there's another less definitive measure of value that an agreement holds, that is, again, like you can't really define it. I think that it's just that it just adds the importance that these two sides do come to an agreement and play baseball.
How important is it for Major League Baseball to have a provision in there for guys who aren't willing to play?
So we were texting about this last week, I guess it was, and I kind of threw it out there saying that, like, I think Major League Baseball, if a player doesn't want to play because of a health risk and they then forego their salary, they should have the right to do that. Like, I don't think that MLB should be, like, you know, whipping them like a sled dog to, like, get out there and play in the current conditions. I think that if somebody... I don't know if we know of anybody who's like seriously, seriously at risk from an underlying condition, but maybe they have a relative who does or something.
Family member or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. If there's for some reason that they feel like they don't, that it's too big of a risk, I don't think you can force somebody to do that. And so I think that you would at least give them some autonomy in the decision.
Well, the Commissioner Rob Manfred, when he was on Anderson Cooper last week, he did say that pretty much verbatim, that any player who doesn't want to play does not have to. And so I felt like that was kind of a common sense thing. Like, you know, yeah.
But what does that mean? That's my question. What does that mean? Does that mean they get paid?
Sure.
Does that mean they don't get paid?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, look, I feel like that would be with any job. If you don't work, you don't get paid.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, whether or not that team would work out some sort of deal or something like that, I'm sure it's only going to be bigger names that would even try to do something like that. But I did read an ESPN article who was talking about the fact that Ryan Zimmerman has his wife's pregnant and she's going to have a baby this summer. And so he's not really looking forward to this idea of not being able to see her or be around her. I think his kind of idea was, oh, I'm going to be there for the birth of my kid. And so how will that complicate things as to whether or not he just waits until after the birth of his child to come back and play, or if he does the whole 2-week quarantine?
I do think that we've talked about a lot of the safety protocols that MLB has proposed. Honestly, I think that those safety protocols are so thorough, I don't know that a Major League Baseball player who's out there playing is at much more risk than, like, you or I, who's going to the grocery store, once a week or something. And then, like, if one of our partners has a baby, like, we, you know, I think everybody, to a certain extent, is exposed to some risk in society. That's just the way pandemics work. And so, right. I think there does need to be some, like, understanding that we can't just, like, totally prevent some of these underlying risks that we all are under every single day.
Yeah, I think with the 67-page document that came out, my first thing what did everyone say when it first came out? Oh, 67 pages. Yeah. Man, you know, it was one of those, they covered everything.
Could they not have stretched it to 69? Like, would it have been that hard to just, like, throw some more in there?
Nice.
No, you know they had to stay away. But it was one of those, I was listening to guys talk about, oh, they're gonna sanitize the dirt, you know, and it's like, no, they're not. But what Major League Baseball wanted to do was to put it out there that, look, we are taking this very seriously, because not only are they taking, they're fighting two things. Yes, they want to play safe, but also they want to keep the appearance that they are doing everything they possibly can. There is a PR aspect to this. 100%. Will, yeah, Will, you were talking earlier about what NASCAR is doing. NASCAR did one of the most ridiculous things with the photo that was going around. Kevin Harvick wins the race, and he's standing there next to his car. There's not a person within 10 to 20 feet of Kevin Harvick, and he's wearing a mask on his face.
Right. Right.
But why did they do that? Because they knew that photo is going to be distributed to everyone. That's what people are going to see. And they're, oh, NASCAR is taking this very seriously when it comes to the broadcast. They've got the 6-foot boom pole out here. Oh, because NASCAR is taking this very seriously. You know, they are doing everything they can to prevent the spread of coronavirus, as we've heard in every commercial. And Major League Baseball is doing the same exact thing with this document that covers everything from, you know, they don't want baseball players, when they're warming up, to use the same baseballs. They want everyone to have their own set of baseballs, to which Mike Francesa was on the air this past weekend saying, hey, maybe baseball players should get their names monogrammed on them, so everyone has their individual set. You know, it's just, now, wouldn't that be cute? You know, it's just, that's where we are.
Like, you watch the Bundesliga, and you have players on the bench sitting like 6 feet away from each other
in the stands,
the socially distanced distance that's required or whatever. Meanwhile, like, the other players that are on the field are like slobbering and, you know, sweating all over each other, fighting for aerial balls. And then, like, one of the teams, after a goal was scored, like, one of the players like kissed another guy, like his teammate who scored, on the forehead. And it was just, he was clearly trying to, like, send a signal, and then, like, the Bundesliga had to come out and be like, he will not be punished for this, but, like, it's like, you know, players are going to do their own thing, but the leagues have to set up the most safe place possible.
I see MLB's side of this, because at the end of the day, it's their ass if someone gets sick, honestly. So I see the reasons why those particular things are being put in place and why everything is so thorough, and because of the fact that you have like I don't see why it's productive to bash a league that is literally trying everything they possibly can to keep its players safe. And the other part of this too, that I think when we go back to talking about the money scenario, is that the one thing that I think that this is exposed in a macro sense is just how royally messed up the economics of the game of baseball are, from the standpoint of, you have plenty of teams who, whether it's not in their best interest to compete right away, or it's in their best interest to just kind of take the revenue sharing stuff and pocket it, and, you know, wait and play for the future, it's exposing a lot of those inequities and exposing a lot of ownership groups that, quite frankly, don't belong in baseball, because they don't know how to turn a profit, they don't know how to attract fans, and they don't have any interest in competing for championships. And so because of that, you have a scenario right now where I think a lot of MLB owners who are looking basically to take it in the teeth right now, and even with the proposed revenue split, are thinking about taking it in the teeth because of the fact that they're going to lose the gate and lose a lot of the money from that revenue standpoint. I think that you might see some turnover when it comes to some ownership groups, because of the fact that not only does this throw caution to the wind when it comes to the way Major League Baseball's economics go, but when you think about the new CBA that expires, that will replace the one that expires in December of 2021, they're going to have to take a long look at the way that they organize contracts and the way they organize competitive balance in the league, because I don't know how sustainable that is long term, especially when you think about the losses that will happen this year.
Yeah, I mean, baseball probably has one of the weirdest economic situations with the way players are able to kind of move through the ranks when it comes to the team control, the renewable contracts, then the arbitration phase, all that stuff. And I would imagine, because of the fact that there's no salary cap in baseball, I would have to think that there's probably some of the biggest disparities of any sport between, like, the top earners and the lowest earners. I do want to go back for a second. Will, I don't think we're, like, I'm not meaning to, like, bash the Bundesliga or NASCAR or anybody for, like, having these protocols in place.
No,
what I'm saying is that, like, they have to do that, and then it's on, the onus will be, if, like, on the players. Like, the players will be breaking rules. I'm air quoting breaking rules here, because that's just, you know, they have to cover their bases, but sometimes to a ridiculous extent that seems unnecessary, but just so that they can kind of put it out there that, look, we're paying attention to this, and just let the players do what they're going to do, or drivers, so,
it's like,
or whatever.
Like, the pirate code is more like guidelines instead of rules.
Yeah, yeah, but then to go back to the financials, I mean, it's a difficult conversation to have, right? Because we don't know the numbers. We don't know the revenues that MLB brings in exactly, and especially in this situation, like what that looks like. I'm sure there will be new revenues that are brought in based on this made-for-TV package that Major League Baseball will have. I'm sure they will probably be doing more mic'd-up things, more, and there will be just more sponsorable TV products that can be put out there. So it will be interesting. I don't know. I don't really know how to have a conversation on the financials of this
without seeing the books.
Yeah, exactly.
It's difficult for me to envision, you know, what the future of baseball looks like with them in an impasse. But the one thing that I do know is that when we do get back to play, and we talked about this a little bit last week, you know, I think the Braves are set up about as good as anybody can be in this combined AL East, NL East hybrid that we're going to have here when they start a play, whether it's in July or later on, because I do think they have the depth when it comes to position players. And I also think they created a lot of unintentional depth when it comes to their starting rotation and their bullpen. And I think, you know, you're going to have a sense where you might have a scenario where you have to go maybe to a six-man rotation or do some other creative things to your roster, especially with it being expanded, and you might be able to use some minor leaguers or people who were projected to be in the minor leagues that'll be on the big club, like Kyle Wright, things of that nature. I think from a depth standpoint, this is really going to showcase one of the things that I think people didn't realize was a strength of the Braves that might actually be a strength in this modified season.
I feel like I've been talking a lot. Caleb, you take a shot at it.
No, it was just I was trying to look through, because when it came to the number of players, they're gonna be what, giving 50 players, and I think
30, 50.
Yeah, so they'll have 30 active, and then they can, I think what they're calling it, taxi between the other 20. So that's huge for the Braves, who are going into, you know, had a spring where you had a lot of young guys, and all I kept hearing was it was either guys' time to prove themselves or to get moved for other options that could be used right now. Christian Pache, a perfect example of a guy who this is put up or shut up time before the Braves decide, are we, you know, is this the future, or are we moving on, kind of deal. So I think this lands perfectly for them, where it gives them that option to, you know, to be able to see what they have and compete at the same time.
You're also giving up a year of service time for him, though, too.
That's the interesting thing, is like, how will clubs? Sorry, go ahead, Caleb.
I don't know what they're going to do, but I would have to imagine that any arbitrator is not going to side with a club in this instance of playing time, just because, I mean, these are most absurd circumstances. You're getting half a season. Are we really counting it as half a season, or is it a full season?
Right.
What are we doing there? I don't know. I think in that instance, I wouldn't. I guess as a fan, I wouldn't worry too much. But then again, if I'm a player, I'm surely keeping an eye out. And I have to imagine that's one of the big issues that Tony Clark is going to have to fight for the players, is that they, it, you know, get some sort of option of you know, playing time.
Yeah, I'm very curious to kind of see how teams handle this, especially with some of their top prospects, where keeping that clock from starting is so important to a lot of these teams. And like, do they want to start that clock during this season? I don't know, but I do think that I definitely agree with you that I think the Braves have the depth where these rules actually fit quite well with what they have already in stock. I think the way I kind of see the Braves is like, they have some top end talent Freddie Freeman, Ronald Acuna, like these guys are some of the best in baseball. But I think just like when you're comparing the Braves to some of the league's other top teams, they probably don't have quite the amount of that premium talent. And I think that what really bolsters them is a lot of that depth. Last year they used tons of pitchers kind of coming in through the starting rotation when they needed them. You had guys coming up from the minors. Austin Riley came up and made a big contribution. You just had a lot of pieces, and I think that those will come very much in handy this season. But, you know, to kind of go back to what Will was talking about, bringing up this question, I think a lot of the conversation that we've had on this podcast, what Braves fans have been having in general, is kind of the impact of the new DH rule and how that's going to fit the Braves really well. It's going to at least solve a problem for them where, at the beginning of the season, it was kind of between Austin Riley and Johan Camargo because both were some of the best, you know, the hottest hitters in spring training for the Braves. And now you just have natural spots for both of them. But I think, you know, the starting rotation was kind of 1B in terms of the competitions that were taking place in spring.
Sure.
Felix Hernandez was looking like a guy that you could not cut him. The way he was pitching. Sean Newcomb was doing everything you would have asked Sean Newcomb to do, especially particularly not walking guys. He was not, I think he had like one walk in all of his spring training appearances. And Kyle Wright was absolutely dominating as well. So I think that the Braves actually have an opportunity to use a six-man rotation if they need to. We don't know exactly what the schedule is going to look like, but you have to imagine it's going to be pretty compressed. You might be having more doubleheaders than you normally would, especially if you end up getting postponements or cancellations. There's not as many days to make up those kinds of games. So I think that I would expect all six of the Braves pitchers, including obviously Soroka, Fried, and Fultonevich, and combined with the three I just mentioned, I think all six of those guys will get a decent amount of run this season.
I really loved what Wright did in the spring. Like he compressed his wind up. His stuff had a lot more movement on it, and I think he had more of a command of the strike zone. And again, you wonder again about the sample size, and you can't really break down a spring training start the way you do a regular season start, because those guys are trying different things, and you're not necessarily going through a pitching plan in the general sense. But
and Kyle Wright also pitched really well last spring too.
When he
and
did,
then he, and then he, that, that's very why true. He got, that's why very he started fair. In the opening series, and then things kind of fell apart for him. But
that's very fair. It's very fair. It might be a minuscule thing, but I'm wondering, you know, especially for these young pitchers, I'm wondering if the impact of not having to worry about hitting is a particular relief for them. I don't know.
It makes me sad that we won't get to see Mike Fultonevich that, because he's always just hilarious when he hits.
I wouldn't say sad.
Yeah, the only pitcher I will miss seeing bat would be Max Fried, at least when it comes to the Braves, just for the pure fact of he's one of the few who actually has some skill when it comes to hitting. You know, I mean, just look, all of these guys are typically below average. You know, we'll miss out on the moments of, you know, having a Bartolo Colon hit a home run and everyone remembers it for forever kind of deal. But you'll get more offense, you know, you'll lose some of the double switch and all that kind of stuff that I might call garbage. That might be a little too hot takey. You know, some others might call it strategy, but whatever. When it comes to the game, I think it'll speed things up, and you'll ultimately get more offense. I'm honestly in a different mindset, I guess, when it comes to this rotation and what I think is going to happen when they actually get games going. I'm thinking how Brian Snicker is going to think. Is that I think we're going to see less six-man rotation, more five-man rotation, and one of those starters, which I would guess would be Sean Newcomb, is going to be converted into your expected long reliever or guy who you can call on as soon as your starter is out of there, only because it's I don't know. Most people think that starters aren't going to go as long as you might have typically seen in a normal season.
Yep.
And honestly, I just, you know, guys at our station might have a hard time with the way that Snitker manages, but I just think it is the way that it is, and we've kind of learned his style. I think he'd more adapt to going and keeping a traditional sense of a five-man rotation, and then use a guy like Sean Newcomb in that long reliever, that more a quick guy he knows he can turn to.
Yeah, I wonder what this modified season is going to do for the argument, or at least the folks who are in the quote unquote opener camp. Like if that particular philosophy gets magnified or junked as a result of a modified season. I don't know how I feel about compromising a bullpen once every 5 days in a compressed season like this, but there might be some who feel like it'd be a good philosophy to impart. I'm not sure, especially if you have an expanded roster.
Yeah, Gabe Burns from the AJC did a couple articles. Gosh, they were probably more than a month ago now at this point. But he was talking to Leo Mazzoni, talking about how he dealt with the Braves pitching staff in that 95 season after coming off of the strike. And, you know, Leo said that pitchers were, you know, they couldn't go as long, obviously, for obvious reasons. And so, yeah, Caleb, I think you might be onto something there. I do wonder if you might see, instead of a six-man rotation, I think you actually would need, like, two, maybe even three guys who you could rely on to go long, designated lawmen. Because when you go long, then you need longer to recover, so it's not like you can just get one day in between.
Yeah.
You might need more options there. So I think, yeah, like, and I think that Kyle Wright or one of the other starters could do a job like that, because I think it's kind of a similar mentality where it's like, when you're a long man, you're not necessarily coming in to get out of like some sort of high leverage situation. You're typically just going in there with the mentality that I need to get through the lineup once or twice or get through three innings, four innings, however many it is. And so I think that you could have Kyle Wright do that as well. It will be interesting to kind of see how it goes, though, tactically. It will be an interesting situation. And I think that when we talk about the rosters, and for these reasons, I do think that you're likely to see a lot of those, what, four extra spots, because they were going to 26 men this year anyway. I think most teams will use, like, three of those spots on pitchers.
Who scares you in the AL East now that you're going to see more of them in this season if it does resume this way? I think the Yankees have to be
the Yankees are obvious. Yeah.
Obvious
I think
choice.
The Rays are amazing. Like, they're
peculiar. They're a peculiar threat, I guess you could say.
And Toronto can bite you too. I mean, a lot of people haven't been talking about them when it comes to like the top opponents in the AL East, but
so basically everybody but Baltimore is what you're
pretty
saying.
Pretty much.
Well,
yeah,
I was going to say, is there like an E option, all of the above? And then I was like, well, no, throw out Baltimore, but. Yeah. Then just the rest, I don't think you'll be able to take any of these teams lightly, especially the Yankees, who, if there's going to be any team that's going to want to, you know, try to grab the attention of a shortened season and who can play really strong for, you know, the first half of a season, it'd be them.
Go ahead, Joe.
I do think it's really interesting that these two divisions are getting paired together, because it's something I mentioned a lot last year when the NL East was as competitive as it was. I mean, maybe it didn't end up that way in the standings, but you had legitimately four teams that could win the division. And
they were competitive against each other. Braves won the balance of games that were outside of their division, and the other teams didn't.
Exactly. And if you look at the way that the division shook out, you got to look at how each of those teams played against the Marlins. You know, it's like it actually does put a lot of weight when you have so many competitive teams. It puts a lot of weight on, can you beat the Orioles and beat the Marlins on a consistent basis? Like, those games actually have a lot of value because of how, you know, how much you're expected to win those games. You really need to come through and execute. And I think the Braves did that. You know, the Braves did do that way better last year than any of their NL East counterparts. And I think we're likely to see the same thing again this year.
It's going to be very fascinating, because there are going to be matchups that like the Braves and the Yankees that are basically kind of fantasies for a lot of people just because of the fact that those two franchises have such a storied history against each other, especially when you think about what happened in the late 90s and even the Red Sox and Braves with the combined lineage of being from Boston, that'll create a lot of intrigue as well. But I also feel like I said earlier, that I don't know of a franchise, at least in this group of 10 teams, that has the kind of organizational depth and consistency across that depth. Like if we're power ranking the players 1 to 30 on all 10 of these teams, I feel more confident about the 10 to 30 range of where the Braves are than I probably do about any of the teams not named the Yankees or Red Sox, personally.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier, where it's like I feel like the Braves aren't at the level as some of these teams are with the premium top talent, but I think that further down the roster, I think the Braves have a lot more, or at least just like a lot more consistency, a lot more proven experience in that tranche of players.
What do you guys think Major League Baseball can take from the opening of play with the stuff we saw this past weekend?
Well, I think it's as simple as there might be a lot of concerns and issues brought up at the forefront. You get a week, 2 weeks in, and everything's pretty smooth, and people will start putting this stuff behind them, and we will go on somewhat business as usual. I think that was the biggest thing with NASCAR coming back this past week and Bundesliga coming back and that kind of thing, is it happened. We had a winner. We had something to focus on besides coronavirus, coronavirus, coronavirus. And everyone kind of exhaled a little bit. It was like, let's meet back here next week and do it again.
Yeah. Doesn't it feel like you kind of, like, when you get into this space where it's like, lockdown, be careful, be safe, it's like all these, you're hearing all these, like, messages about, like protecting yourself and confining yourself in this space, and then it's very can be like mentally and emotionally scary to like get out of that space when you've had all this messaging put on you. So I think I'm sure for a lot of those Bundesliga players, for anybody who was involved with this stuff, it's like, oh, we can actually get out here and do this, you know? And then once you experience that, you start to perceive things maybe differently than you had before.
Yeah, I think the other thing is we're having a conversation now of if we, you know, when we go back to play, not if, but if a player or a coach or something happens to, you know, get the virus, what will we do with it then? And how will we kind of handle it and move past it? And I think there's a lot of solutions and ideas out there of how to handle it, whereas it was what, just 3-4 weeks ago we were talking about if someone gets the virus, all this whole thing's shutting down, it's toast. And now we're at least in a headspace where we can have the conversation of, hey, let's not absolutely panic if that happens, let's handle it and kind of continue on, and we're not looking at it where the UFC was a couple weeks ago when they had it and they continued on with their fights and everyone was like, oh, these guys are crazy. You know, these are those type of people. And now we're all kind of like, oh, I think we can handle this reasonably.
Well, I'll give Joe the credit on this one because I think, again, it comes down to the fact that we now have the testing. We now have the amount of testing that's in this country where, you know, you can give the tests over to these leagues and not jeopardize the public, if you will. Like, I've been seeing so many articles lately that say, oh, we now have more tests than we have people to take them. So because of that, I think we are in a situation now where if someone does end up getting sick, then it's just as simple as, okay, we test everybody who is in the scenario and range of those people, use one of the short-term feedback tests, and then we quarantine anybody who's found to be sick. And I think it becomes that simple when we now have the testing infrastructure that's able to be implemented when somebody's infected.
And the Athletic did lay out in their plan, I did find it a bit interesting that it was, you know, this idea that players are going to be tested a couple of times a week once we get underway. But that once we get further into the season, it seemed like the wording that they used seemed like that might relax a bit because they are concerned with competing with, I guess, those in the medical field that are going to need those tests. And so I'm a bit curious about that. The wording that I read through was a bit interesting about, you know, once we get into like August and September, that the private market that they're getting these tests from, they're not going to want to be taking them from people who actually need them.
Sure. And I think that that's a concern even right now still, but they just need to have a higher level of testing to get this thing started. I do think it's interesting to kind of go back to something you said about the UFC, where it's like there was some freak out after the fighter who tested positive. Are you guys... I feel like I see quite often, like, on Twitter, I don't know if it's people just, like, trolling, like, not being serious, but it's like... Anytime there's like a new report about, like, for instance, the safety protocols, like the 67-page document, or if there's anything like that, it's like there's people in the replies who are like, cancel it, cancel the season, cancel it. It's, well, like,
yeah. I have something from John Heyman. He just put this out as we're recording.
Oh, breaking news! We need a breaking news center.
Well, yeah.
It's not necessarily breaking news, but it's new information that speaks to the overarching discussion. It says, MLB hasn't yet made a new offer to players, but has painted a bleak economic picture for the season without fans at games. MLB has suggested hypothetically they'd lose $1.5 billion plus, somewhere between $1.5 billion and $2 billion, even if 82 games were played for free with no player pay, which is not necessarily a real scenario, but the union obviously is skeptical about those numbers. I don't know why they would throw that out there just all willy-nilly. I think there needs to be, and again, this is a very, very hard line to take, but I think somehow, some way, there needs to be an independent arbitrator when it comes to the exchange of the books and the auditing when it comes to these teams and what the union has to see from that perspective.
Yeah, I've kind of, I don't want to say it's like I'm siding with one side or another, because I really do not care.
You just want to play.
I just want baseball to be played. I don't care what numbers they come across. But I will say that I think that the general sentiments that I've expressed have probably been more...
owner sympathetic.
I haven't put as much pressure on the owners as I feel like a lot of the public sentiment has about, like, the owners are trying to screw the players. But I will say the players should absolutely have private access to numbers, to at least some numbers that are relevant to this negotiation or to a potential agreement happening. I mean, like, you can't agree to do a revenue share without knowing exactly how much revenue you're sharing.
I wonder though. Again, it would have to be an independent third party arbitrator. Like, right. I don't want these books cooked up by Leopold Bloom or something like that. You know what I mean? Does anybody else get that reference? Please tell me we get that reference.
I got it. Yeah.
Thank you, Joe.
Sorry, I'm lost.
That's the accountant from the. Very popular musical, The Producers. He cooked up the phony books to Max Bialystock, the then Broadway producer. But that is a story for another day. Thank you, Mel Brooks.
I will reiterate, Mel Brooks is a
genius.
Shoot, what was I going to say? Now I lost it. Now I started thinking about Mel Brooks.
I'm sorry. Accounting, third-party accounting, something. Books, numbers.
No, I'm sure I'll think of it as soon as somebody else starts talking about something else.
Damn it.
that's how these things
As long as we don't have Korean sex dolls in the stands, that's the one important thing.
Hey, I'm surprised they had so many sex dolls available. You would think if there's any time when the sex dolls are, there's going to be a run on sex dolls, it's during the quarantine, right?
My question when it comes to that, is someone had to identify them and know what they were.
Well, no. Someone if you guys had read the story, if you saw the story, they were holding up signs that were apparently advertising, again, in Korean. None of us can read Korean unless anyone of you tells me differently. But they were holding up signs that were advertising adult streaming sites. So that was the giveaway. That was the giveaway.
Wait, so who got to put the fake fans into the stands? Like, who?
Apparently
I'm interested.
Apparently the team bought them from the company that that was distributing these.
But the team wouldn't have put these signs in their hands.
Apparently, the company said it was a packaging error.
Sure.
Phrasing. I'm sorry.
Sure.
Guys, I have good news to get us off this topic, which is that I remembered what I was going to say. Breaking news sounder. So one, just kind of to take it back to the negotiation to bring this thing back
from off the rails.
Yeah. Again, when we're looking at these negotiations between owners and players, I think it's really important for people to understand that, like, when you're talking about the owners, you're talking about the organization, the club, you know, like, and that involves a lot of people aside from the owners. I feel like the way that we frame the owners versus players is like the owners is 30 billionaires sitting, you know, sitting in a lavish conference room talking. And maybe, and that is probably how, like, you know, to an extent,
a bunch of Jerry Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. But like at the end of the day, the bottom line for the owners affects the operating budget for their ball club, and that's going to affect a lot of employees. And we're already going to see furloughs of people regardless, because there aren't going to be fans, and so there are jobs that aren't going to be needed for this season. But you know, I just hope people kind of like can take that on board, that it's like we're talking about money that would be going to. It's not like the money is simply going right into one person's pocket, you know, like who runs the club. It's going into a broader economic system.
I just found out that Jameson makes cold brew coffee, whiskey infused coffee.
I bet that's good.
I don't know if that if that has any alcohol in it, but I'm immediately intrigued. Anyone else?
Sounds like Perfect, like bachelor party. Bring along
whiskey, coffee. That's my kind of thing.
I'll keep my coffee.
Yeah, it's okay. We have anything else for the good of the cause, gentlemen?
Reminds me of like why does anybody ruin perfectly good chocolate by making it mint?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Could not agree more.
Or like the people who like mint chocolate chip ice cream. Like that is, I don't understand anybody who wants mint in their ice cream. Like what is the deal?
Absolutely horrible.
Totally with you.
Keeping on some sort of similar topic, I do feel like I need to, because we didn't talk about him, and so I thought at some point I was going to have to issue a some form of an apology, or just to say I was wrong from last week. Where last week I had a very firm stance where I was like, you know, I'm tired of all of these people in the media coming out and saying that the players are only interested in the money. Like, no, the players are interested in their safety. And then Blake Snell came out and said what he said on...
Well,
yeah.
I thought we talked about him last week. Did we not talk about him last week?
No, we did not. No, it hadn't happened yet. And so it was one of those, I could not...
Well, damn it, guys. I was avoiding because I thought we already talked about it.
No, that was in the rundown, but it's fine. No, it's just one of those... I could not believe that right after I was like, there's absolutely no way that a player is really more concerned with the financials than he is his health, which would then affect the financials. And then Blake Snell was like, ta-da, I'm here, and I'm going to tell you on a Twitch stream let me be Blake Snell for a second. Hey, bro, you know, man, no, I gotta get mines. Like, who are you? Sit up straight and talk right. Like, man, come on, stop with this fake lifestyle that you're on your Twitch stream, I guess, around your friends kind of thing. It's just, I honestly could not believe that he said that. And then, of course, it was none other than Bryce Harper on his own Twitch stream playing video games. Who
clown
was like,
question, bro.
Yeah, who was like, oh, I support him fully. I'm glad somebody
well,
said
that's
it.
The other part is that I think that there are probably a lot more people who feel like Blake Snell and Bryce Harper than are willing to come out and speak publicly about it.
And I'm glad they don't come out and speak publicly, because there's a lot more Major League Baseball players that have enough sense to know that that stuff's ridiculous, because Blake Snell is one of the most just irrational. He speaks before he really thinks, because as Joe put in our group chat last week, and I shared it with Dukes and Bell, and they took it to air, he was one of the first people to be like, oh, man, I'm not worried about the coronavirus thing. Like, he's always got something...
If I get the Rona, I get it, man.
Yeah, he's always got something quick to say, and so he should not be your spokesperson for the players, but instead, he was... The face of the players to kind of come out and say, oh yeah, you know, I'm worried about taxes. Oh, I only play in Florida and don't have to pay state income tax for the games that I play in Florida. But you know, just all of these kinds of ridiculous things that I would say uneducated on the topic to just come out and speak. Also, maybe we shouldn't be taking players' Twitch streams as their official statements, but that's a whole other subject. It was just such a wild kind of... I just knew, like, no player's gonna come out and say that they're worried about the money kind of thing.
Not so fast.
And it was one of those, I stand corrected.
I actually felt kind of bad for the players after seeing that, because it's like, man... These are the exact optics that you don't want out there. Like... Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand that they have to, like, it's a labor dispute. They have to, you know, fight for what they believe they deserve. But, like, this is the exact kind of messaging that you just don't want to be public. And it's going to go viral like it did. So I kind of felt bad for them to an extent that this happened. But I really did love, I think it was an article in The Athletic afterward that was, like, the headline was, like, despite controversy, Snell vows to stream again, or like something like that.
Yeah,
like,
well,
he'll be back on his stream.
A very stream again.
Yeah, a very 2020 kind of
right
thing.
Yeah,
that,
it's like only in,
well, I mean,
only in 2020.
I didn't think that there could be a more incompetent face of the players than Tony Clark, but I guess that's not true. I guess that's not true.
Yeah, it's one of those. He does, and the I guess the biggest problem is he has an argument as far as
right.
You do have to understand, look, he has a job and he wants to make the amount of money that he was set to make. And he's obviously just like anyone who's been affected by this whole pandemic. He's very frustrated and he wants his money. And that's a great conversation to have while you're not in the face of the public and being put on quote unquote record as saying that. Those are the kinds of conversations you have with your friends in a private conversation, and then your agent or, you know, Tony Clark or whoever is speaking on behalf of you cleans it up and puts the right things in there and put the priorities when you really think about it. But unfortunately, when you do a Twitch stream, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, if you go back and watch the video, I really truly think that, like, he just got really into, like, some, like, spoken word poetry. Like, he was, like, feeling it, you know? And so
and people get that way. Like, one of the things, I play video games to relax. I don't play what I would call difficult video games. I'm very boring when it comes to video games. Yeah. Because it is my time where my brain kind of shuts off and I just want to relax a bit. And I feel like that's kind of the headspace that he was in, is, you know, you get asked this question and you kind of get on a roll, you get on your soapbox per se, and just really start to feel yourself in, and you almost, it's kind of one of those, you say to yourself, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And, like, everybody, like, all the 20,000 people in the Twitch chat are like, hell yeah. Maybe they were. I don't know. But I did think it was funny, like, you know, again, juxtaposing that with, like, what we've heard from Ronald Acuna wanting to, like, go play in Venezuela if he can't play here. And the part that kind of got me about the Snell thing, and again, I think this was just him kind of in the moment being really bravado, where he's like, I'm not even thinking about this year. I'm thinking about next year. And then, like, 2 days later, Acuna posts a picture on Instagram of him, like, working out in a parking deck with, like, where you can see Truist Park right behind him. Like, he's like, he can't wait to get in there and start playing it again.
If that's not the biggest divide in privilege, I don't know what
right,
is.
Yeah, yeah.
I once again reiterate that I still have... I have an insane lack of confidence in Tony Clark. In fact, I'll go completely, you know, Queen Amidala. If this body is not capable of action, I suggest new leadership is needed. I move for a vote of no confidence in Tony Clark's leadership, replacing Chancellor Valorum with Tony Clark. Yes.
Don't full Queen Amidala.
Yes,
I like that.
Yes, I have referenced the producers and Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, during this podcast. That is doing the Lord's work, gentlemen. That is doing the Lord's work.
I think that's a good way for us to get out of here.
And it's a good way for us to end on. Again, if we have anything that comes about with regards to movement on the negotiation front or an agreement, perish the thought, we will get it to you on the Batter Up Podcast.
Emergency pod.
3 a.m. will do anything.
I'm dying for an emergency pod. I want to bring this emergency pod.
If you call me at 3 o'clock in the morning, I will personally come to your house and kick your ass. I will literally
do social distancing, man.
I will eschew social distancing. I will eschew.
I put this on Twitter. It's like, I can't wait for like all the social distancing rules, and then the Marlins, pelt Acuna with the first pitch, and then there's just like a huge brawl.
Yeah, but that's why
like the owners is like.
Yeah, that's what I said. I think though, if that were to happen, I'd wonder how many players are gonna try to keep social distancing, or like, all right, kicks,
throw baseballs or something, throw my glove.
Will there be their own balls that are monogrammed?
Oh, no, they don't care.
They will not. We will not monogram the baseballs. We will not monogram the baseballs whatsoever. Thank you, Caleb. Thank you, Joe. Thank you to those of you who listen. Again, be sure to get the Batter Up Podcast on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcast. We will talk to you next time. I'm Willie P. Saying so long.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.